everyone. We're a little bit depleted up here. The House is still in session. We've got some members out, but nonetheless, we can still get going with the public hearing on House Bill 2270. Before we get there, I'd like to go through this bill a little bit with the Legislative Revenue Office, with Dave Beck and Caitlin. So why don't we start with you, Dave, if you want to put up the bill and just quickly walk us through.
Chair Hess, members of the committee. So this is section by section explanation about House Bill 2270A. So on page one, section one says it increases the tax rate by 100 mils per cigarette, and that is equivalent to $2 per pack of 20 cigarettes. And section two is for section three. In section three, it says after expenses and refunds, the bill dedicates taxes from additional cigarette tax rates to the state's medical assistance program, including mental health services. The portion is 90%. And then the remaining 10% goes to various programs addressing tobacco and nicotine use related health issues, including cessation and prevention efforts. Together with next section four, amends expense payment provisions in Cigarette Tax Administration and Enforcement. In section four, together with section three, amends expense payment provisions in Cigarette Tax Administration and Enforcement. So under current law, admin and enforcement expenses are paid out a 58 cents portion. With this bill, with this measure, the 60.61% admin costs will come out of additional $2 cigarette tax portion. The revenue is coming from it, and the rest continues to come from 58 cents portion. 60.61% is $2 out of $3.33. Page three, section five, just updating obsolete language. Three and four, section six. Now, in the definition of cigarettes, now we include little cigars. Under current law, little cigars are taxed as other tobacco products. Washington State actually taxes little cigars as cigarettes. Pages four and five, section seven, for a dealer or retailer, prescribes a floor tax, that's inventory tax, and considering floor tax could be high, there's an installment payment plan for retailers. So within 6 months, the retailer has to pay all the floor taxes. Page five, sections eight and nine, it prescribes inventory tax for the distributor. The same payment scheme. Pages five and six, section 10 declares floor taxes from sections seven through nine to Oregon Health Authority Fund. Page six and seven, section 11. As to statutes, the definition of inhaler delivery system for the purpose of taxing the systems as other tobacco products other than cigarettes. And it lists items excluded from the definition of inhaler delivery system, including certain marijuana related delivery systems. Section 12 on page 7 and 8
It imposes tax on inhaling delivery system. It also removes 50 cent cap on cigars. Under this measure, cigars will be taxed at 65% of wholesale price with no cap. Explicitly excludes from tobacco products taxation marijuana-related inhalant delivery systems. So this section is related to almost our last section, making illegal certain priced cigar products. So page 8, section 13, specifies that the tax from inhalant delivery system is not subject to current other tobacco products distribution formula. Currently, about 54% goes to general fund, 47% to OHP, the rest tobacco use reduction. Now, this money from inhalant delivery system will be dedicated to medical assistance program, including mental health services and various programs addressing tobacco and nicotine use related health issues. Page 9, section 15. So this is local preemption exemption part. So local government can actually tax on inhalant delivery system defined in this measure. Pages 9 through 10, section 16. This section is to comply with Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act and various regulations. But it makes the sale of cigarettes in packages with fewer than 20 cigarettes illegal. Makes the sale of cigars illegal unless the wholesale price of the individual cigar exceeds $3 per stick, or the cigars are sold in a package containing at least 4 cigars, and the wholesale price of the package exceeds $12. So essentially, it tries to eliminate cheap cigars from the market. Page 10 in section 17, it applies to cigarette taxes. Well, it says the new tax rate will be effective on January 1, 2021. Pages 10 through 11, section 18 through 21, the bill allows DOR and OHA to disclose certain otherwise confidential cigarette tax and other tobacco products information to each other for regulation and compliance purposes. And then page 11, the last section, submits this act to the people for approval or rejection general election. That's the bill summary.
Thank you. There's a pretty standard tobacco tax language in here, but there are some new wrinkles in here, aren't there? First is the inhaler tax, which has never been taxed before. I was wondering if you could clarify what that means, layman's term, and also go over the change with cigars. Mm-hmm. It was a departure from the way cigars have been taxed. And then if you could talk about the floor, which appears to be new language in tobacco tax policy.
So first of all, inhalant delivery system is basically referring to e-cigarettes and vaping products. And the definitions of inhalant delivery system is specified in the bill. And explicitly excludes marijuana-related inhalant delivery system. Marijuana products are taxed elsewhere, so we're excluding them. And then a second, in terms of cigars, actually, so the
in terms of revenue, the vast majority of cigar revenue, cigar tax revenue, comes from very cheap cigars. About 8 million annually comes from the cigars that are not capped at 50 cents. So some expensive ones, we have revenue about 1 million annually. The section 16 practically removes the bill. So what it does is, if the per stick price at the wholesale level is less than $3, cannot be on the market. Or a package of four cigars or more, if its price is less than $12, cannot be on the market.
What does that mean?
So it cannot be on the market.
It's illegal to sell the cigars whose wholesale price is less than $3 per pick, a stick.
You mean for practical purposes, it won't work to be on the market?
Meaning very cheap cigars. As I mentioned before, the vast, about 8 million out of close to $9 million tax revenue from cigars come from very cheap cigars at taxed at 65% of wholesale price. They're not subject to 50 cent cap. To get to 50 cent cap, apply the price times 0.65.
I see.
So per stick price is less than $1.
Okay.
To reach 50 cent cap.
I see. So it's mathematically impossible.
The section 16, actually, because it's a package of four or more to be on the market, to be legally sold, a package of four or more cigars have to have a price of $12 or more at the wholesale level. So it could be packaged in 10, 15. So it is possible that some cheap cigars can be packaged in a way to be sold in the market. So it's not, so if the stick price is less than $3 at the wholesale price, cannot be sold in the market. But at the same time, if it is packaged in a way to exceed $12 in a package, and it can be sold in the market. So there is a room for some cheap cigars can be sold.
Did you have anything to add there?
If you want me to go through a little bit of revenue impact, I can do that, or?
Do we have that in OLIS? Do you have that on OLIS? Is it in there?
Yes, Chair has.
I did not see it. But yes, if you put that
as a preliminary?
Yes.
So,
fix that cigar thing.
Revenue impact. So on the current measure, the little cigars will be taxed as cigarettes. So the revenue coming from $2 per pack, additional $2 per pack, and trading little cigars as cigarettes, and then including floor tax, the anticipated additional revenue from the cigarette tax is about 108 for 1921, and then the full impact will start in 2123. So cigarette tax will increase about $160 million a year because of $2 extra tax. So the per pack price increases from $1.33. Per pack state tax increases from $1.33 to $3.33. So there will be substantial decline in consumption, but at the same time, there is a substantial increase in tax. So this increase in tax will more than offset the revenue loss coming from substantial decline in consumption. So on average, please.
Is there at some point a diminishing return? I mean, at what point do you start going downhill because the tax is so high?
I remember 4 or 5 years ago when I was on zero tax, then we calculated about $8 per pack state tax would completely eliminate additional revenue. I don't know if that still applies, but just vaguely remember that. So substantial increase. From inhalant delivery system, this is, please.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today, the state of Washington increased the tax 9 years ago to about what this tax would go to. Do you have the numbers on the decline in smoking in the state of Washington following that increase?
Chair Haas, Senator Benz, in terms of smoking rates, there is secular decline, but that substantial increase in tax at Washington State didn't actually reduce smoking rate too much. Instead, stamp tax sales actually declined quite a bit. So there, I mean, Washington State continues to have some smuggling problems. Mean that after the substantial increase in taxes, the smuggling rate increased. When you look at the data, the smuggling rate at Washington State remains at around 40%.
And that didn't change
after the tax increase. Stamp sales tax declined substantially.
Thank you. That's consistent with what I expected to say. Thank you.
So moving on to inhaler delivery system. This is New Hour State. So we draw this revenue impact from states having similar taxing programs. For example, state of Pennsylvania enacted a taxing on entire delivery system at 40% of wholesale price. So that's one example we looked at. So on an annual basis, it's about $12-13 million additionally. We are giving much less growth rate to this inhalant delivery system revenue growth, partly because Juul is removing sales. Well, actually moving to just internet sales only, and then removing some of the popular flavors. And so typical assumption on inhalant delivery system is just 10-15% growth annually. We cannot give that considering all the regulations and juice moving to internet sales only. So we have some minimal increase in inhalant delivery system revenue. Removal of cigar cap, actually. So about cigars, we have some data. We don't have plenty of data to draw a very credible conclusion. But we did what we could. Removal of cigar cap from 50 cents And together with the floor price of cigars at $3 per stick or in a package could be lower than that. Our assumption is this removal of cigar tax cap would bring in some revenue that much, but the last part prohibiting certain cigars, so they should meet a certain minimum price or minimum package requirement, then that would pretty much wipe out cheap cigar market. But at the same time, we have room for some cheap cigars being sold in a large package. So we have some anticipated revenue left there. But we're saying that about 70-80% of cheap cigar markets will be wiped out from this floor price requirement. It's good for prevention and cessation effort, but in terms of revenue, we're losing.
Okay. All right, thank you, Dave. We do have a list of people signed up to testify. I'd like to start off with Patrick Allen from OHA. To talk about the purpose here and some of the mechanics. And then we're going to go till 6 o'clock. And so I'll go through this list, try to do pro and con, and if you could do the usual thing where we limit you to, say, 2 minutes each, maybe we can get through most of the people. So, and perfect. Deanna Mack from Department of Revenue will join us. So, Mr. Allen.
Good, thank you. Patrick Allen, Director of the Oregon Health Authority, and joined by Deanna Mack from Revenue, who can help out with almost all the questions, I'm sure. I want to make just a couple of quick points about this bill, and then see if there are, in fact, questions that you can answer first. This is an agency-submitted bill that had its genesis really 100% in public health. This was really around increasing the price of cigarettes to be able to drive down the rate of smoking. Tobacco kills nearly 8,000 people per year in Oregon. Increasing the price of tobacco helps all people who use tobacco to quit, including youth and children. When people quit smoking, it helps their families escape the health and economic burdens of nicotine addiction. This bill, although it's kind of surprising seeing as much amendment activity and those kinds of things that have occurred on it since it was first introduced, really is essentially the same, contains the same four main policy objectives that we submitted back to DAS over a year ago in the bill development process. Those four things are increasing the price per pack of cigarettes by $2, imposing a new tax on e-cigarettes, changing the definition of little cigars, and removing the tax cap on premium cigars. And that original submission from us to DAS, I think, is available to you on OLIS today. Oregon doesn't tax inhalant delivery systems such as e-cigarettes at all. E-cigarettes are the most popular tobacco product among young people in Oregon today. We need every policy tool we can to try to reclaim lost ground in smoking by youth. We've given up about 4 years' worth of reductions in the rate at which young people smoke to basically being substituted by their taking up e-cigarettes instead. That was the genesis. Then over the summer, the governor assembled a work group to look at long-term sustainable funding for the Oregon Health Plan, and this really fit into that. Into that scheme. Without the tobacco tax, which is one of the four pillars of the funding plan that she submitted, when we come back in, when you all come back in 2 years to do the next Oregon Health Plan budget, you'll be about $300 million short. So it's an important but relatively small component of this biennium's budget, but it's a major key to the sustainability long-term of the overall funding package that was assembled. Beyond that, increasing the price of tobacco will improve the health of Oregonians on the Oregon Health Plan and reduce tobacco-related health care costs for the state. About 27% of the people on OHP today currently smoke. The cost of tobacco-related illness among the OHP population is about 9% of all OHP expenditures overall. Just a couple of quick facts. At $1.33 per pack, Oregon ranks 37th for cigarette taxes nationally. Washington and California have the 9th and 10th highest total, respectively, and this would put us on a par and really create a sort of an equalized pricing system across the West Coast. We don't tax inhalant delivery systems like e-cigarettes, including Juul. Youth use of inhalant delivery systems has increased dramatically in recent years. In Oregon, e-cigarette use among 11th graders nearly tripled from 2013 to 2017, from 5% to 13%. That's 11th graders for whom the product's not legal even before T21. I'd point out. A $2 per pack increase for cigarettes will reduce cigarette consumption among youth by 21%, adults by 14%, and OHP members by 17%. The last point I would make is that prevalence of cigarette smoking and thus the health and economic impacts fall disproportionately on communities of color, especially African Americans and American Indians and Native Alaskans who smoke at significantly higher rates than the rest of the population. With that, I'd be happy to answer easy questions, and Deanna can answer hard ones.
Well, I just have a fundamental one. Why $2? What was the strategy in coming up with that figure as opposed to $1.50 or $3.
It was to equalize the tax rates across Oregon, Washington, and California, and get them to more or less the same rate.
Some mechanics questions. I don't know that the tobacco tax has worked badly for what we've had, but why change the way we do cigars, reversing or removing the cigar tax cap, and what looks like prohibiting certain cigars, which will, as you heard Day say, remove some products from the market and therefore result in a revenue loss?
Yeah, I think, Chair Haas, we're really aiming that primarily, frankly, at kids. Today you can go into a convenience store and get, if you will, a single serving of grape or cherry-flavored tobacco in the form of a small cigar for about the same price as a candy bar. And what we really want to do is fundamentally change that dynamic.
Okay, so we're talking about those kinds of products.
Okay. Well, the cap on the 50-cent tax cap also has an impact on premium cigars. That's aimed a little bit differently. The definition of premium cigar is a pretty wide range, and so some of that gets at that, and others less so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad you're here. I have an article here from Reason Magazine, June edition. And they're quoting from the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. And I'm just going to read a small section of it here. It says, the overall vaping rate rose between the surveys they're talking about, one of which is the Journal from the National Cancer Institute, the January version. The overall vaping rate rose between the survey while the smoking rate declined, which is consistent with other surveys. In fact, adolescent smoking rates have reached record lows as experimentation with e-cigarettes surged. A study reported in the journal Tobacco Control last year found the downward trend in smoking among teenagers accelerated as vaping became more common. If more vaping means less smoking among teenagers, that represents a significant public health improvement given the huge difference in risk. So my question to you is, you must have a study that suggests that what we're doing here is going to result in safer kids. So give me the study.
Sure. So according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention publication, Smoking and Tobacco Use, Electronic Cigarettes, 2017, and my talking points are pretty deeply footnoted, and so I'll go ahead and submit those to Ola so you can look at those sources. But the issue is dual use. People who start on e-cigarettes end up becoming hooked on nicotine and move to other products. Roughly half of all current Oregon youth who currently use tobacco started with e-cigarettes. Most adults who use e-cigarettes don't stop smoking cigarettes and instead use both products. And so it becomes a dual-use issue. The addiction to nicotine is the primary problem.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Betts.
Yes, I thought you would say that. That's why I left this part to follow up your question, your response with. It says here, notably, past month vaping in the first survey was not associated with subsequent smoking, which suggests that the overall correlation does not reflect regular vapers who progress to cigarettes after getting hooked on nicotine. Just 21 students, 0.02% of the sample, initially reported that they had never smoked but had vaped during the previous month and later reported they'd tried cigarettes. In other words, the study indicates that they had tried cigarettes first and then went to vaping and stayed there. And so your point about going on to both products according to this study, is incorrect. Now, they also quote the FDA study. That's the focus of the article. And what I'm just concerned about is in the rush to get the money, these studies, which there are many, are being used and not necessarily being straight up, which that's why I read Reason Magazine, because the analysis tends to be unbiased. But I understand your point. I understand where you're going with it, and I appreciate your thoughtful analysis.
Senator Benz, if I could just respond, I guess, in terms of your comment about the rush to get the money, I would take you back to where I started, which is we began this process better than a year ago, believe it or not, really being agnostic about the money itself. It was raising the price of the product to drive down consumption of the product that was what got us to do this. And so I'd say we're rushing to keep kids from smoking.
Mr. Chair, may I follow up?
Senator Benz.
So that is why I asked Day the question, did the state of Washington enjoy a diminished amount of smoking? His answer was no, even though they've had 9 years of $3 a pack. So I would suggest that we'll have to look at this again in 9 years and see if your analysis is correct. I would suggest that the facts broadly don't indicate that. And what ends up happening is we raise the price, then people, instead of going north or south to get their cigarettes, will go east. And if you look at the states, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, all of those have a price of around $1.50 a pack, a tax. So all we're going to see is a different direction that the smuggling is going to occur from. So, by the way, I'm in total favor of trying to drive down smoking. I agree completely. My son smokes. I wish he didn't. He shifted from smoking to vaping. And I watched him obtain through the mail the juice, as it's called. And I would just note this bill doesn't say a word about stamps or other enforcement methodologies, which I'm sure we can hear about here in a minute, which works so well with cigarettes. So a lot of issues right there, but I would just suggest our wishful thinking about keeping people from smoking continues, along with the millions of dollars this bill will raise on the backs of about 300,000 Oregonians.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Hass. Hello. Everybody knows, yes. So just wanted to follow up on this conversation here, because I know that we're pressed for time. And thank you, Mr. Allen. You've done a great job in trying to succinct. I want to assure people that there is an abundance of information and research and studies around the intersection between e-cigarettes, traditional cigarettes, youth participation rates, addiction. It is extensive. In fact, this has been discussed in some of the other committees, and I myself ran a year-long work group when we considered raising the or starting the e-cigarette tax, and we had all sorts of experts from the state, from different health professionals, and from Multnomah County Department of Revenue was there, Oregon Health Authority was there. I myself ran that work group for a year, and my goodness gracious, is the research extensive. And so this is tough here because we're in a revenue hearing to really get into the details of that. But I just want to make certain, saying this to staff out there in the universe, that we make certain that on OLUS are all the appropriate pieces of information that probably already is there. But let's make certain that all the information is there. Because, and then lastly, at least as an individual, the taxing e-cigarettes, I do believe will change behavior, and increasing the regular tobacco tax, I think that will also change behavior. And personally, my number one priority is protecting youth and protecting people from being addicted to any type of a nicotine product. And whether or not someone makes a profit off of that, that is not as much of an interest to me. What's more of an interest to me is trying to change this behavior. So thank you for coming, sharing what you did. You did a great job. And I know that Deanna, who really is an expert on this, well, she knows a lot about it because I've worked with her for this for years on this, so she can go over the details. But I just want to make certain that we have in OLUS all the appropriate information. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Riley.
Yeah, very quickly. it was mentioned that Juul is going strictly on the internet now, and I'm wondering about our ability to tax the internet sales of the devices and of the, as it's called, juice.
Tax the internet tackle that.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack with Department of Revenue. Senator Riley, I think that there's a bill going through the House, going through this body right now. I think it's House Bill 34 or 36, right, Caitlin? That would require, that would help with assistance on inhalant delivery systems, purchases online. They would have to independently verify the age of the person and track that information for sales. So it'll drastically limit, like, especially youth sales online, and we can use that information to help with the tax. But of course, online sales is the most difficult component of any of this to enforce.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Go down through this list and we'll see how far we get. I'm going to start at the top. Elvis Arguta, SEIU. Where are you? Will they be able to see it?
They'll be able to hear it.
Oh.
In spirit, Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Elvis Argueta. This is Diego Argueta. I'm here to represent SEIU International Union Oregon State Council. One, on behalf of more than 80,000 public and private sector workers represented by SEIU Local 49 and 503, we urge you to support House Bill 2270 and the 14 amendments. SEIU represents workers recognize the negative impacts of nicotine tobacco have on our communities and our economy. Tobacco and nicotine use lead to heart disease, diabetes, asthma, and cancer. And smoking is the number one cause of preventable death in Oregon. These tragedies are not only avoidable, they are costly. Currently, 9% of all spending on the OHP is directly related to smoking-related illnesses. An increase in the cigarette tax will help reduce smoking and save lives, while also raising revenue. HB 2270 will provide funds currently budgeted for the medical coverage of low-income individuals and families on the Oregon Health Plan and help stabilize long-term health insurance costs, and bringing us closer to our union's long-held belief that all Oregonians deserve to have access to quality, affordable health care. Tobacco companies have targeted communities of color, tribes, low-income, and LGBTQ communities for decades in their advertising campaigns, and now youth with e-cigarette campaigns. It's time to ensure that these communities are supported well enough so that when people are ready to quit, there are resources for them to do so. SEIU supports meaningful investments in community and cultural-specific programs to address the prevention and cessation of tobacco and nicotine as outlined in this legislation. SEIU urges your support in HB 227 and the Dash 14 Amendment, a common-sense approach to curbing the use of tobacco and nicotine in our state and raising much-needed revenue. Thank you.
Thank you, Elvis. Questions? We thank you and your partner for coming up.
Say thank you. Muchas gracias.
Spencer Knowles.
Hey, folks, how are you doing today? My name's Spencer. I'm from Bend. I have a vaporizer store in Bend, Oregon, and one in Prineville. I've been in business for about 6 years. I have about 20 employees. And I would like to say that I have helped thousands of people quit smoking. Senator Benz, it seems like you have some personal experience with this. I appreciate that. I also appreciate some research I think you've looked into. But right off the bat, I'd like to let everybody know I am not Juul. My industry is not Juul. And all I've heard about for a year is how Juul and the vaping industry is getting kids addicted to cigarettes. Well, I could submit to you that any study could be shown to show almost anything given the right funding and the right group. I've been on the floor for 6 years. I could introduce you to 21-year-olds who wait until they turn to 21 to come into my stop and learn how to quit smoking with vaping. I could introduce you to 21-year-olds who have quit smoking with vaping. I've never met a customer who started vaping and then went to smoking. It's disgusting. We're fighting against flavors. A lot of people have problems with flavors in vaping, but those flavors and the very essence of vaping is what keeps people from smoking. This bill is a little ironic because I agree with you on the tobacco side. That's a problem. I made it my living to help people quit smoking. I believe in that to my core.
Many other people don't, but that's what I do for a living. You are not going to get more tax money, and you're not going to get less smokers if you affect the vaping. The reason being, if you apply a 65% wholesale tax to me, I'm a mom-and-pop kind of guy. A $10,000 order becomes $16,500 before I can even get the product in my shop and sell it to my customers and regain that tax. So you won't get the tax because I'll go out of business. I don't have the credit line to support that inventory, so I won't be able to order the product to sell to the customer. And you won't get people to quit smoking because I'm getting people to quit smoking with vaping. And I think Senator Benz pointed out a decrease in youth vaping because there was a new product. And I am not for kids smoking, but that is a study that shows, I think, how it helps. And I am not Juul, and my industry is not Juul. We're trying to fight what Juul is doing. We're trying to help. Please don't put us out of business.
Thank you. Any questions, Spencer? Thank you.
Yeah? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Paul Cosgrove, representing the Cigar Association of America, here with just a couple of points about the cigar provisions of the bill, and I'm not going to comment either about inhalants or cigarettes. That's not my client's interest, and the companies that make cigars, generally speaking, almost exclusively make neither of those products. The rationale for changing the cigarette tax has been described, at least in part, as equalizing. Mr. Allen mentioned this, equalizing the West Coast rates. I wanted you to know that cigars are already taxed in Oregon at a pretty high rate. We're in the top quartile of the country. We are slightly more than California. We are slightly less than Washington, but we're certainly not have a differential like there are in other tobacco products in terms of the current tax rate for cigars. So the two things this bill does with respect to cigar taxes is it eliminates the cap, and you've heard that from your professional staff, what that issue is. But I'd like to point out that it is not rare for a wholesale price of a premium cigar to be $10. It's quite common for a wholesale price of a cigar to be $5. At a 65% wholesale tax, that equates to either $6.50 on a $10 wholesale price or $3.25 on a $5 wholesale price. It's a dramatic as a percentage increase on the cost of cigars. And these products are legal to buy from Oregonians over the internet without paying the Oregon tax. That's not how we tax cigars. We do not tax them unless they're sold in this state. So the real effect, I think, of that removal of that cap, especially comparison when Washington has a cap, very much like Oregon's, is we're going to lose business to our neighboring states, but also lose business to the internet. And I think that's a shame. It doesn't necessarily, I doubt that, in fact, that the ultimate result in terms of revenue of removal of that cap will be much revenue, and even your own staff thinks it's very little revenue. I think that's actually quite optimistic, the $3 million. If I may just have one more second. The killer, though, is the wholesale floor price. That has not been done by any state. Now, OHA staff at the hearing in the last committee, and that's where that amendment was added, said there are a couple of cities either have considered this or are doing this. Baltimore was mentioned, Prince George's County. But no state has done that. And what you're really doing, as your staff has pointed out, is you're banning a whole product category. And I think that's an unusual thing to do, and we suggest it's an inappropriate thing to do. So with that, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Paul. Ashley Strong.
We started the timer right away. Chair has members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ashlyn Strong, and I'm the Director of Public Policy and Communications for HealthShare of Oregon. HealthShare is the state's largest coordinated care organization, or CCO, serving approximately 315,000 Oregon Health Plan members living in Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties. HealthShare leaders served as members of the Governor's Oregon Health Plan Budget Workgroup, and HB 2270 is one of the mechanisms the workgroup identified as part of a longer-term funding solution for the OHP. As you heard from Director Allen and others, currently 9% of all spending on the OHP is directly tied to smoking-related illness. This equates to roughly $374 million per year. House Bill 2270. revenue will provide approximately $173 million per year for the Oregon Health Plan, less than half of what smoking costs the program. OHP provides health care for nearly 1 million of the most vulnerable Oregonians, as well as meaningful investments in community and culturally specific programs to address prevention and cessation of tobacco and nicotine. Over 24% of HealthShare members smoke cigarettes, more than higher income populations. HealthShare and other CCOs cover a full spectrum of smoking cessation methods as part of the OHP benefit package, as well as our providers making referrals to the Oregon Quit Line and other public health resources. But the best way to ensure Oregonians don't smoke is to make sure that they never start. And raising the price of tobacco is the single most effective tool for reducing use. Big tobacco is already taxing Oregonians in the form of higher costs for the Oregon Health Plan and increased insurance premiums. HealthShare supported including this proposal in the governor's OHP funding plan because it's time we directed those resources to provide affordable health coverage for the very Oregonians most vulnerable to the marketing and the adverse health outcomes that result.
Thank you. Matt Pickman.
Matt's not here, but could I speak for his cause and take his minutes?
Oh.
I'm new to this.
That's okay. That's okay. You only get one up at bat. It's like baseball when we go all the way around.
I had to ask.
Cassie.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cassie Bresky, here today on behalf of the Oregon Primary Care Association. OPCA is a nonprofit supporting Oregon's 32 community health centers, also known as federally qualified health centers. The community health centers are providers within the CCO networks that deliver integrated primary care, including dental and behavioral health services, to one in four Oregon Health Plan members, or about 433,000 Oregonians annually. Smoking is the number one cause of preventable death in Oregon, and providers see firsthand how smoking-related illnesses affect patients and their families. OPCA's members serve the patients tobacco companies have targeted for decades, including communities of color, tribes, and low-income and LGBTQ communities, as well as youth. Since 2017, the number of middle school-aged kids who say they've tried an e-cigarette has increased by 48%, effectively creating a whole new generation of smokers. We also know that raising the price of tobacco and nicotine products is the single most effective tool in reducing use. A 10% increase in price leads to a 4% decrease in adult consumption and a 7% decrease in youth consumption. Oregon's community health centers take care of the patients with chronic conditions due to smoking, including COPD, high blood pressure, and cancers, in addition to conditions like asthma and breathing complications brought on by secondhand smoke exposure. OPCA believes House Bill 2270 is an opportunity to invest in the future of Oregon families, our communities, and our state's health outcomes. We urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Question. I'd be interested in the concept here is that if we raise the cost of smoking, fewer people will smoke. And then to add to that, the concept is since people who smoke cost our system a lot more money, they should pay for it. Well, the same would be true for many of the things we do in this state. Drinking comes to mind. Marijuana consumption comes to mind. Is it your suggestion from your organization that we should pursue this same approach to try to drive down the incidence, or more to the point, drive down drinking and perhaps impose upon those who engage in that kind of unfortunate practice the obligation to pay for the consequences thereof? Is that what your organization is going to pursue? And this is not a, this question is a meaningful one, so please.
I definitely want to double check and look at the legislation that would be brought forward to impose that position. But I think in general, yes, we've been supportive of ensuring that the consequences of those health outcomes are have the effect of helping pay for the cost that those adverse health outcomes cost the system.
So the follow-up, Mr. Chair, would of course be that we can anticipate legislation of this nature focused on drinking, on marijuana, and other bad acts. I hate to say going to McDonald's, because I recently had a heart attack. I'm sure that wasn't the cause. But the point is, there's going to be some sort of legislation we can anticipate to follow in the trail of this bill, which is to impose upon people the consequences of their bad acts. That's really my question to you. Is your organization going to be doing that?
I can't speak necessarily on behalf of what our plans are for the future. I know that we would be supportive of having a conversation and working with partners to explore those options in other parts.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Jeffrey Ball.
Hello. I'm a small business owner in Portland, Oregon. I own 11th Avenue Liquor. I took over 2 years ago. I have 8 employees. And I'm here mainly to focus on the premium cigar tax, the 50-cent tax. A number of you have pointed out that, one, my biggest competitor isn't the guy down the street. It isn't the cigar shop in Portland. It is the internet.
What's your name for the record?
Oh, Jeffrey Ball, sorry. I didn't have a lot of time. Found out today, so I drove down today. my biggest competitor is the internet. And so if you're raising the taxes on cigars, what you're going to see is you're going to lose tax revenue. It was interesting to see him show that you were going to see a $3.8 million increase in premium cigar taxes. But many states have put on a cap to prevent, because they lost revenue. A cap will prevent all that money going out of state and staying in state, which is important to me. I'm a native Oregonian. I bring in a lot of tax revenue for you through liquor. You're welcome. And as you saw in Washington, when they raised the taxes up there on liquor, all of our border liquor stores did very well and are continuing to do quite well. And that's a good example of what would happen here, where you're going to see, instead of going to another state, they're going to be going to the internet to do this. Another thing, it was interesting to see that a lot of the emphasis behind this bill is to prevent people from smoking. I smoked a cigar with my friend when I was 8 years old. Didn't touch tobacco for another 30 years. It's a good way to get people to not smoke tobacco, is have them smoke a premium cigar, because they'll turn green and they won't touch the stuff.
Thank you for your
I've never heard of anybody starting with a premium tobacco and then starting with cigarettes. It just doesn't happen. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Jim Lace. Alex Kyler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. I'm here in support of House Bill 2270. I would like to speak to the Dash A 15 amendments. Lane County is opposed to the A15 amendments, which would take away the ability of local governments to enable a local tax on vape products. Mr. Chair and members, the promise of 2270 as we came into the session was to create a funding source for public health modernization. This is a program that's never been funded adequately, and under the way the bill is crafted right now, it's very difficult to see how potentially any of the revenue from this measure would make its way to local governments. We are definitely interested. Lane County has been very proactive with tobacco reduction policies. We passed Tobacco 21 prior to the state of Oregon doing that, and we have long been interested in overturning preemptions on local taxation of tobacco products, of beer and wine, and reforming the marijuana taxation system. So we would ask you to not address the A15 amendments to the measure at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tyler Henson. I'm the Regional Government Affairs Director for the International Premium Cigar and Pipe Retailers Association, better known as IPCPR. Speaking to you today in opposition of 2270, which would eliminate the current 50-cent tax on cigars. In my work, one of my main prerogatives is educating lawmakers on the differences between our products and other tobacco products like cigarettes. Traditional large premium cigars are an artisanal product that must endure a long and painstakingly precise process before they ever reach the end consumer. On average, a single premium cigar takes 4 years to produce and will be touched by over 250 hands. Premium tobacconists are specialty stores, so a cigar tax increase will impact 80% or more of their entire small business. The 50-cent tax cap has helped grow our members' businesses and compete with neighboring states like Washington that also have a tax cap in place. It also helps level the playing field with online sellers that currently remit no tax on products they ship in Oregon. The largest online retailers are based in Pennsylvania and Florida, where there is no tax. An estimated 65% of all cigars purchased are ordered online. If the tax cap were to increase to 65% of the wholesale price, instead of being capped at 50 cents per stick, it would boost online and cross-border sales. In this scenario, the state and local small businesses both lose. Any threat to the tax cap is of great concern to tobacconists in Oregon. As small business owners, it is difficult to plan for the future, hire employees, and place large orders when the tax rate that helps them to compete is on the line. Oregon premium tobacco retailers are predominantly multi-generational family-owned businesses. 91% of cigar stores are family-owned and operated and have been open for an average of 17 years. Removing the current cap on premium cigars will not achieve the outcomes hoped by the proponents of this bill. Instead, raising the cost of premium cigars will only change the purchasing behavior of consumers' online stores, where zero tax is collected and distributed to the state. The state will receive less revenue, and small businesses will drastically lose revenue. The legislature's goal should not be to force these businesses to begin selling products they do not wish to sell. Our members ask you to amend SB 2270, reestablishing the cigar tax cap for the sake of these small businesses. Thank you. If you have any questions, we'd be more than happy to answer them.
Yes, Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Hass. Can you inform me who delivers the actual, is it which company generally delivers the cigarettes or the e-cigarettes or the cigars or any of the products out of Pennsylvania? Who's delivering them?
So, Senator, there are a number of online retailers. So the state of Pennsylvania and the state of Florida don't have a tax on cigars.
No. Excuse me. Is it Amazon, United States Postal Service? Who's actually physically delivering the product, not who's selling the product?
Oh, Postal Service, United States Postal Service, okay. UPS. It depends. I don't work for those companies, so I don't know what freight services they use. Mm-hmm. But the reason they're located in these states is because there's no tax. Mm-hmm. And I have not come across a state that's been able to figure out how to collect those taxes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, cigarettes are protected. You can't buy cigarettes online, mm-hmm. but you can cigars. And so I was really amiss seeing those numbers projected, because I think those numbers on the boost of revenue is based off the current rate of who's buying cigars. Somehow they're going to get more revenue. Well, consumers are price sensitive. You know, before, mm-hmm. you know, Oregon has having the 50-cent tax cap, they're relatively can stay competitive right now. But we have a number of states moving to cigar tax caps for the sole reason because they're losing revenue and stores are closing. New Mexico is a good example. They specifically put a 50-cent tax cap on their cigars this legislative session because stores were closing. And they wanted to make sure that they can collect those revenue and keep those places in business because they saw the fact they were losing revenue to online sales. So the idea that the state is going to increase their revenue, it's I haven't seen it yet. I work in 13 states and I haven't seen it.
Thank you.
Woody Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Hass, members of the committee. My name is Wendy Johnson, here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. The League is here because of the Dash 15 amendments that would amend Section 15 of the bill and thereby preempt cities and counties from imposing a vaping tax. There is no vaping tax on the books right now. Some cities and counties have looked at that. The League's policy adopted by the Board of Directors for decades has been that we need as much flexibility for stability of our own revenue sources, and so we want to be able to have this as a choice in the future. This is very much akin to existing taxes, for example, lodging taxes, marijuana taxes, and gas taxes, where the state has a tax, and cities and counties can also choose in their community whether to not to impose a tax. So for those same reasons, we think that that provision should be left in the bill as it is and you not adopt the Dash 15 amendments. I would remind the committee that the cigarette tax in Oregon passed in 1967 because it had failed the voters many times, but it passed because back then 25% of the money went to cities, and then another 50% of the cigarette tax went to property tax relief to assist lower income. So 75% of that initial cigarette tax was distributed essentially to locals. And so we don't want you to do the same mistake again, because now cigarette tax revenues is declining rapidly. It's now less than $2 a person that cities receive for this, and vaping and Juul and that technology is increasing. So to preempt is now is the wrong choice, and it's not a sustainable choice. And for those reasons, we ask you to not approve the Dash 15 amendments. Thank you.
William Miller.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is William Miller, and I am a descendant of the Cherokee and Blackfeet people, and I serve as the Health Equity Program Coordinator at the Native American Youth and Family Center, located in Portland. Our Native American communities and tribes throughout the United States uphold and value the importance of tobacco as traditional medicine used to promote mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional well-being. When our people use it in a sacred manner, it's not to be correlated with addiction or other detrimental health impacts. Though when it comes to our youth, adults, and elders consuming cigarettes in an unhealthy and non-ceremonial manner, we need to implement upstream public health approaches to ensure the focus is on prevention and intervention. The tobacco tax does just that. This legislation will provide $346 million per biennia for the Oregon Health Plan, which provides health care for nearly 1 million of Oregon's most vulnerable population, as well as bring meaningful investments into communities and culturally specific programs to address prevention and cessation of tobacco and nicotine products. Our Native American community members are wisdom carriers, they're life bearers, they're aunties, uncles, brothers, sisters, mothers, and fathers. We have to preserve and protect our communities from the harmful impacts of tobacco use. Implementing the tobacco tax would guide our communities to reducing consumption. In turn, it'll provide healing, greater health outcomes, and lifelong positive health impacts for generations to come. On behalf of the Native American Youth and Family Center, we urge the passage of an enrolled version of House Bill 2270 for continued health, healing, and lifelong longevity of our people and our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple of people from Roseburg, Jason and Jordan. You guys want to come up together?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time. My name is Jason Weber, and I own two brick and mortar stores in Roseburg, Oregon. I also manufacture and distribute e-liquid. If you want to put $2 tax on cigarettes, I really don't care. What I do care about is continuing to help adults quit smoking with what has been proven to be the most successful alternative. It's also been proven to be at least 95% safer than combustible tobacco. It's hard enough competing with the internet. If you add a 65% tax, it will make it impossible. Not to mention, you won't get the money that you've projected. The first gentleman earlier spoke and said, I think it was $12 million they would get from vaping. Even if you could get that, let's be realistic. Smoking costs the state of Oregon $1.54 billion a year in healthcare. That's right, smoking costs $1.5 million a year. Smoking also costs Oregon $357 million in Medicaid. So someone please tell me how it makes sense to take away what has been proven twice as successful as the patches and gum to help people quit smoking. Let us do our jobs without fear of losing business and watch how much money the state can make by saving. Can my business survive this tax? Honestly, I don't know. What I do know is that I will reluctantly shut my doors and I'll end up moving somewhere where they have a reasonable tax or they are bringing owners to the board or to the table to speak about something that's reasonable for everyone. I wish Oregon would finally open their eyes to the fact that we are not pushing a sin product and we could make smoking, we can make it to where smoking isn't the leading preventable cause of death. bring us to the table. Talk to industry experts like myself. Let's work together to put something reasonable in place. I'm just tired of living in fear when I'm doing the right thing and I'm helping make Oregon smoke free. I hope you will help me to do the same in opposing this tax as it pertains to vaping. If we cannot, I would like to say that I am for the Dash Amendment, but I would prefer to just not have vaping in the bill, period. So thank you for your time.
Chairman, members of the board, my name is Jordan Silva. I'm the sales manager for Vape Crusaders. Not only will the proposed tax on vaping hurt my ability to do my job, but it also endanger the income that I'm able to bring and provide for my family. The fact that e-liquid and vaping is being labeled tobacco product is like saying that coffee is a soda, simply for the fact that they both have caffeine, or in this case, nicotine. Why is it that gums, pills, and patches are not labeled tobacco product, but yet vaping is? Why is it that gums, pills, and patches are not included in this bill? Is it because they're tied to Big Pharma? The purpose of this tax is to generate more revenue, seems backwards to me. By implementing a vaping tax, you're returning people back to cigarettes because their mom and pop shops had to close. And two, those people who do switch back to cigarettes are more likely to use the new revenue that you just created. If you wanted more revenue, in my opinion, why not encourage vaping as the alternative to combustible cigarettes and prevent the cancers and lung damage that you're all aware that it causes? You need to break the wheel. If any of you are educated on vaping, then you're already aware how it can save lives and has the ability to help people quit smoking. If places like the UK and New Zealand are encouraging people to switch to vaping, not only for the health benefits, but for the effectiveness to help people quit combustible cigarettes, then why aren't you? The fact remains that the most common reason for e-cigarette use continues to be in order to quit smoking, and smokers who use e-cigarettes on average have a higher motivation to stop smoking than by other methods. Passing a tax on vaping and e-cigarettes product would cripple that main purpose. CNBC just yesterday posted an article about how a 69-year-old father was able to quit smoking after 35 years by switching to vaping. The article goes on to say that the U.S. health officials say that e-cigarettes are inherently less dangerous than cigarettes because they do not undergo combustion. This is one of many, many stories of people that have their lives saved by switching to vaping. So my question is to you, what is it that you really care about, helping save lives or robbing them of that outlet just to create more medical revenue that they're in turn are going to use anyway just because they're being denied a safe and proven method to quit smoking? Thank you.
Ms. Coughlin.
Chair Haas and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Coughlin. I'm legislative director of Children First for Oregon. Children First supports HB 2270 and the Dash 14 amendments. Through the development of the Children's Agenda, we work with our more than 110 partner organizations to identify and elevate legislative concepts that will support the needs of Oregon's children. Increasing the tobacco tax will not only help fund the Oregon Health Plan and provide targeted dollars for prevention and cessation programs, but it has the added benefit of lowering the number of children and youth who use nicotine products. Research shows that raising the price of tobacco and nicotine products is the single most effective tool in reducing use. And we know that tobacco companies have targeted communities of color, tribes, low-income, and LGBTQ communities for decades in their advertising, and now youth with e-cigarette campaigns. And this bill will provide meaningful investments in community and culturally specific programs to address prevention and cessation. We ask that you support HB 2270 as a statutory referral, and thank you very much for your time.
Colin Rao.
Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for your time today. My name is Colin Rao. I'm the founder and CEO of Emerald Vapors Holdings. We're based out of Eugene, Oregon. We employ 30 people in Oregon and operate 4 retail stores. We also supply products to about 250 other stores, the liquid products. Our stores are 21 and over establishment. As my constituent Spencer noted, vapor stores are, like mine and many others in Oregon, are not Juul. I quit smoking using vapor products 7 years ago. It's why I started my business. I believe in this product, and I believe my customers who say they won't buy their products from Emerald Vapors if the price doubles. Most say they will go online. This bill is an attack on small businesses and low-wage earning Oregonians who have chosen a safe alternative to cigarettes. Let me repeat that. This bill attacks the most effective tobacco harm reduction strategy we have available. This will put myself and many of my constituents out of business and make these products inaccessible to those who need them the most. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Doug Riggs.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, off the record, Doug Riggs here on behalf of the Oregon Alliance Children's Programs, the School-Based Health Alliance, the Alliance for Kids. I know you've heard a lot on this bill, and I'm not going to belabor the point, and I certainly won't submit long written testimony, but I would make three quick points. First, and I think this has not been mentioned nearly enough today, this is a referral to the voters. So this is an issue that we would ask the voters for input on, and I think it's an important way of doing business. Second, e-cigarette use among youth is a rapidly growing health epidemic. In 2017, national studies show that 28% of youth in 12th grade reported using vaping. In 2018, that number was up to 38%. That's a 42% increase in some sectors in 1 year. So why is this a problem? E-cigarettes contain up to twice the amount of nicotine as a normal cigarette. Nicotine, we know from research, has a significant impact on the adolescent brain, interfering with both memory and attention processing. For my health programs, that's important. My second point is that vaping is very easy for youth to get into, and the market is making it more so. Kids are not just vaping at school, but they're now vaping in school and in classrooms. Just ask any high school educator who you come into contact with. New measures for surreptitiously vaping, like this vaping hoodie, which is now available online, with the vaping device built in, it is making it much easier for youth to vape 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In fact, the advertising for this product says, vape any time and vape anywhere. That apparently now means in class. So nicotine users are now honing their addiction while sitting in the back of a publicly funded classroom. To summarize, and I've given you a pink sheet here that outlines some of the research in response to Senator Vence's questions. The vaping industry has done an excellent job convincing our youth that vaping is safe. I think this two-pager takes issue with that. This is a reasonable bill. It's an important bill. It's a reasonable approach, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Timothy Porter.
Senator Haas.
Oh, sorry, Senator
Taylor.
Thank you, Senator Haas. For what it's worth, I generally don't bring up much of my personal life in committee. However, my son just graduated from high school, and my daughter's about to go into high school at Cleveland High School. And not because the staff there have not been working tirelessly to try to reduce or prevent vaping from going on, but vaping is literally, it is completely out of control at that school. And my daughter is very much involved in basketball, and we travel all over and go to high schools all over. Right now she's down in Grants Pass. I haven't been to the high schools there. And I was on the student success tour where we traveled throughout the state. And it is completely, anybody who will say that there is not a vaping problem in our high schools has not spent time, I would say, in the high schools. I really want to thank you for bringing that to everyone's attention, because it's a very, very serious issue in our schools. So thank you.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Timothy Porter. I own a vape shop in McMinnville, Oregon. I want to clarify that the things that these kids are using are the Salt Nicks, the Juuls. They're small. This isn't something that your normal vapor actually uses. When people come into our shop, we sell them different devices, not like that. Those are just things that are popularized by youth. It's not, we don't even sell that stuff in our shop. I've helped a lot of people quit. I've watched the nicotine levels come from 24 all the way down to the most popular right now is 3 milligram. The nicotine levels are dropping. The reason kids are getting their hands on this, I have 4 kids. I don't want my kids getting their hands on it, is because it's able to be sold online. You don't sell cigarettes online. You don't sell liquor online. Why are these products allowed to be sold online? All they got to do is check, yeah, I'm 21, and it gets delivered right to their door or their buddy's house. this is going to hurt a lot of people that are trying to make better choices with their life, trying to get a safer alternative to wean back their need on nicotine. We help people walk down and, you know, quit. A lot of people do that. And a lot of the tax, I mean, they're going to order it from China. They're going to order it online. China don't care about your tax. They're just going to ship it right to them. And it's going to hurt all these shops that are trying to help make a difference. My wife has asthma. She was on a nebulizer several times a week. She vapes now. She does not use the nebulizer hardly ever. I mean, like allergy seasons, or if she has, like, if we have a drink or something like that, she sometimes gets asthma and like has to use her, has to use her nebulizer, but she does not use her nebulizer near as much anymore. I mean, it's like it collects dust. Last time she needed it, we were in a panic trying to find it. It is a better alternative. We're not trying to pass it off as a safer alternative. It's not good for you. I tell everybody that it's not good for you, but it's 1,000 times better than cigarettes. It's 95% safer. That's all I have to say. Thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate your testimony. Thank you. Christopher Friend.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Christopher Friend, Oregon Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. ACS CAN has over 5,000 members across the state. I am here to voice my support for House Bill 2278. It's the best way to encourage current smokers to quit while pricing young kids out of the market. Specifically, I am invested in this effort because I've seen how big tobacco has targeted my community, specifically the LGBT community. I have been at a gay bar in Portland when big tobacco comes in with their advertisements, takes a photo of IDs, and then sends coupons for their products in the mail, specifically to target my community. They sponsor tents at pride parades to allow smoking, and I'm just tired of big tobacco targeting my community, which is why I'm here to just say that ACS CAN is supportive of House Bill 2270. With that said, we are opposed to the Dash 15 amendments. One, it's bad public policy. Just because we've preempted tobacco products doesn't mean we should go forward with poor public policy on e-cigarettes. We're caving to a deadly, harmful industry that has indeed intentionally marketed to kids as a new generation of addicted to nicotine products. Our local communities have made meaningful work in the last few years, specifically Lane and Multnomah County, in addressing nicotine addiction. All we're doing with Dash 15 amendments is removing their ability to do what we know is good policy, which is empowering local communities to do what's best for their own community. We know increasing the price of tobacco and nicotine products is the best way to encourage smokers to quit. Why would we remove a tool from a toolkit from our local communities to do what they do best? Smoking rates will decline with the tobacco tax increase, save lives, and reduce healthcare spending. That's why ACS CAN is supportive of House Bill 2270A. Again, we oppose the adoption of the Dash 15 amendments.
Okay, Christina Bottomore.
Good afternoon, committee members. For the record, my name is Christina Bodemer from the American Heart Association. I'm the Oregon Government Relations Director. I'm going to focus my testimony today on some of the assumptions we've been making around the safety of e-cigarettes. You know, we don't have the decades of science on e-cigarettes and the safety that we do, or the danger of them that we do on traditional cigarettes, because they haven't been around long enough. But what we have seen is already enough that we should be willing to take swift action in public policy to prevent youth use. E-cigarettes are not an approved cessation device. There are no clinical studies about the safety and efficacy of e-cigarettes as their intended use that have been submitted to the FDA for consideration. Nor have the FDA exercised their ability to approve any products as modified risk tobacco products to date, which would allow for single specific products to market themselves as posing lower health risks. E-cigarettes have been falsely marketed as safe alternatives to traditional cigarettes. But what they've really done is targeted youth and created a new generation of tobacco and nicotine addicts, reversing the decade-long progress that has been made in reducing youth use. Increasing the price of tobacco, as you've heard many times now, leads to substantial reductions in tobacco use for both youth and adults. However, preemption is an industry tactic to prevent tobacco control. I would ask that if this body considered doing anything on preemption, it would be removing it in its entirety for all tobacco products to allow communities to address tobacco use in their own way. However, given the current predicament we're having with e-cigarettes and youth use, it's particularly important that we allow local communities to be able to address this one kind of product, as we've seen its ability, this rampant increase of youth use in this particular way, and not include it in the preemption if we're unable to remove preemption in its entirety. Thank you for your time.
Good evening, Chair Haas and committee members. My name is Carrie Neeson, and I'm the Senior Director of Advocacy for the American Lung Association in Oregon. Our mission is to improve lung health and prevent lung disease, and we're a big supporter of increasing tobacco taxes. With the master settlement dollars that started to come into states in the late 1990s, we saw a development of innovative policies and programs around the nation. And these programs and policies worked. We have decades of evaluation, and we know what it takes to reduce tobacco consumption in our states and in our nation. It takes a comprehensive approach and a combination of policies. The American Lung Association issues a state of tobacco control report every year, and it takes a look at policy areas in five different areas that are evidence-based and are known to work. Oregon's report card shows us that there's more that Oregon can do. This year's report, we had an F grade in both program funding and program and tobacco taxes. HB 2270 paves a road to improve our grades in both of these areas. We also oppose the Dash 15 amendments. We believe it's good public health policy for local communities to implement their own policies to protect their communities and improve their health. So while we would vote and while we would urge a no vote on that amendment, we ask for a yes vote on the bill. It's a win for our youth, our communities, and Oregon's health. Thank you.
Thank you. We have time for just a few more here, so I'm going to call Carrie Thiessen, and then I will put Sean Comer, Stacy Michelson, Murray Williams on deck, and then that's all the time we have tonight.
Co-Chair Haas and members of the committee, my name is Allison Seymour. I'm speaking on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association on behalf of Katie Thiessen. I'm a registered nurse, and my professional practice is in medical telemetry care. I'm not just dressed up. I have to work at 7, so I appreciate this moving on. So I will submit my formal testimony into OLIS, but I do want to say a couple of things. Too often I see patients where the leading cause of their disease is something that is preventable. And nurses across our state, across our country, want efforts made to make this preventable. I have taken care of so many patients that have been affected by these diseases, these cardiovascular diseases. I've seen how awful these diseases can be. I'm there. I see people die because of this. I've seen, so COPD is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and I've helped provide comfort to people as they're fighting for their lives. I've been at the bedside as patients struggle to breathe, as they're suffocating. I'm the one helping them with the oxygen. These diseases cause so much physical and emotional torture. The anxiety is incredible. I've been right there at the bedside as patients sign DNRs. As people make that choice to end their life or to either make their choice to be DNRs or end measures. I recently took care of a patient that still smokes 2 packs a day despite losing a limb. She's about to lose another one. Furthermore, these diseases are difficult and expensive to treat. Many people can't afford these medications and these inhalers. And the OHP costs, as you have the data, they're astronomical. Thank you for the time. The rest of my testimony is in OLIS.
All right. Have a good shift. Yeah. Sean Comer.
Co-chair, now member of the committee. For the record,
Sean Comer, Oregon Association of Hospitals, representing all 62 hospitals in the state. My official testimony is on OLIS, and I sort of wholeheartedly support and urge you to pass 2270. This is really, really important public policy. You've heard all the experts here today, and we agree with the public health reasons to pass this bill, not only from a public health perspective, but also to protect our youth. And I think what I really want to highlight for you today is the messages and the testimony that you have got from our individual members. So not only have they asked me to come here today and tell you that we support this as an organization, but they took the time as well to send messages to you personally on OLIS. So many of our members supported this and sent this into you as well. So we look forward to working with you to pass this bill and to continue to work on it through this process. So happy to answer any questions, but I'll give you back some more time today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Sean. Stacey Michelson.
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stacey Michelson. I represent all of the districts and school districts in East Multnomah County, and I am here today. I've submitted a letter on OLIS with a number of other education stakeholders signed on as well. And similar to Sean, I won't belabor the points that others have shared, but we're here from the education standpoint in support of House Bill 2270A. Largely really excited about seeing the inclusion of the tax on vaping products. As others have mentioned, we've seen an astronomical increase of youth trying vape products, but particularly using them in the classroom. However, it's not just a concern for our in-building issue. It really is a question of what that means for the future health outcomes for our students. We do know that youth who are able to avoid substance use, whether that be tobacco or alcohol, until age 21, are far less likely to become lifelong users at a problematic level. So anything that we can do to help curb the rise in vaping among our students, we're in support of. I will thank Doug, because I was going to talk about the ease of vaping in classes that our teachers are combating, but the sweatshirt is a new one to me. So I think we all learned a little something today, but I urge your support of House Bill 2270. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Williams.
Chair Haas and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Williams, and I'm here today representing a coalition of over 60 partner organizations to express our support for House Bill 2270, many of which you've already heard from today. We want to thank the legislature for its thorough consideration of this policy by way of this, its third public hearing, and a total of four informational hearings on this measure. I would like to reiterate that this legislation, if passed, would be sent to the voters for consideration and final approval for them to consider the funding of Medicaid, the need to address the epidemic of e-cigarettes, and the impact that tobacco and nicotine have on the healthcare system and lives in this state. Additionally, there's a 10% allocation in this bill that would fund culturally specific, community-based, and local governmental programs to address cessation and prevention and health disparities related to tobacco and nicotine use. Due to the systematic targeting of marginalized and low-income communities by big tobacco. Furthermore, this bill provides an exemption for products that have been labeled as cessation and prevention device from the 65% wholesale tax. Let me repeat that. This bill provides an exemption for products that have been labeled a cessation device from the 65% wholesale tax. The current cost to OHP due to tobacco and nicotine-related illness is nearly $374 million per year. The costs associated with tobacco and nicotine, aside from the devastating loss of nearly 8,000 Oregonians annually, impacts all of us Oregonians, whether we smoke or not. I urge you to take a look at the long-term impact that this legislation would have in drawing down the cost to our healthcare system and the practical implications that this bill would do to curb youth use and make meaningful investments in programs that will help people quit. Additionally, there's a multitude of letters of support posted on OLIS by those who could not be here today, but who wanted to voice their support on this important public health and revenue raising measure. I appreciate your time, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. We are out of time. We have depleted ranks. Senator Riley.
Yeah, just a small comment. One of the things that concerns me about this, I'm very much in favor of this bill, but I'm very concerned about the effect of internet sales and how we deal with that. And I don't know how we do it. I know this bill doesn't, but we need to find some way to work on internet sales.
Yes, agreed.
It's always interesting being on this side and hear the differing opinions from around the state, Bend, Roseburg, Portland, and I very much appreciate the heartfelt words and for people coming to the Capitol and engaging like good citizens. There'll be more on this this week. The record is open for anyone to continue to submit materials, and that's always open, 24/7. So thank you. And with that, you're going to leave me hanging?
It's all yours, Mr. Chairman.
With that, we are adjourned.